Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? You think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? You think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Thinking, Chris, shrinking, nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking, honorary degrees from Lincoln, I cross borders like those Sheikins and do albums in a weekend, I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling, I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking, them lies and them liars, I still make flyers, I still ride bands and say MC for hire, I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face, then you got them rappers with that cold broke face, they torn around the world, then they going no place, my KRS one moves at its own pace, on vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop fronting.
Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals, what a spectacle, they get mad when I say I and God are identical, you better get on your knees and praise them, these conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too, ooh, deja vu, you seen this all before me, slaying your crew, I'm known by all the kids, I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did, people don't stop calling Chris for gigs, cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid, me getting bullshit, I can't even count all the dough this month I did, from coast to coast, we roasting toast, I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close,
do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready for you now? Do you think they're really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready for you now?
Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame, but the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame, so they blame rappers like we are insane, like we are to blame for society's pain, like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic at all, but he just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique, it was special.
Can you see by the dawn? Thank you.
you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring with the harmony. Oh, let it be. Let our rejoicing rise high. South has the Georgia. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us to far. Yeah.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Yeah, my fault, everybody. Sorry for that long delay. Oh, y'all tripping. I don't know how long I was over the air. Okay, what I'm going to do today is, I had the mute button on. I apologize for that, everybody, man. Those blog talk breaks, like I said, we've been off for a minute, so things have been kind of shaky. So what I'm going to do is this, play part two of the GOP Black American History Saga that I've been on. A lot of you all enjoyed that. Thank you for enjoying it. So I think I left off with part eight. So we'll start from part 7, 8, 9, 10. We got about 20 more minutes to the left. So let me go ahead and kick it off with 7 to lead you up to where we're at now. About 30 minutes, everybody. So this is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. We're about to go into GOP, Black American History. It's all about Black American history. No, excuse me. It's about American history in black and white. You can go check that out.
But the Democratic response went beyond words and also included actions. For example, in 1956, Democratic Governor Alan Shivers of Texas deployed the Texas Rangers to keep blacks from entering schools in Mansfield. The following year, 1957, Democratic Governor Orville Faubus of Arkansas called out the National Guard to keep black students from entering Central High School in Little Rock. However, Republican President Dwight D. Eisenhower quickly intervened, and he federalized the Arkansas National Guard to take it away from Governor Faubus. Eisenhower then replaced the Arkansas Guard with 1,200 troops from the elite 101st Airborne Division, ordering them to protect the 9 black students who had chosen to go to Central High. Democrats in the U.S. Senate strongly protested against Eisenhower's actions to protect these black students. Georgia Democratic Governor Marvin Griffin also attacked Eisenhower's actions and promised that as long as he held office, he would, quote, maintain segregation in the schools, and the races will not be mixed come hell or high water, end quote. Meanwhile, in Arkansas, Democratic Governor Faubus, unable to prevent black students from attending school because of the federal protection they had received, simply shut down the schools for the next year to prevent further attendance. And Virginia Democratic Governor James Allman, like other Southern Democratic governors, also shut down public schools rather than permit black students to attend. In 1960 in Louisiana, where Democratic Governor Jimmy Davis supported segregation, it required 4 federal marshals to accompany little Ruby Bridges so she could attend a public elementary school in New Orleans. So deep-seated was the racism among Southern Democratic leaders that when the 1964 Civil Rights Bill became law, Lester Maddox, who became Democratic Governor of Georgia, sold the fast food business that he owned rather than serve blacks in his restaurant. And in 1960, Mississippi Democratic Governor Hugh White even requested that evangelist Billy Graham segregate his crusades, something Graham refused to do. In fact, when South Carolina Democratic Governor George Timmerman learned that Billy Graham had invited African Americans to a Reformation rally at the South Carolina State Capitol, he promptly denied use of the facilities to the evangelist. Some Democratic Southern governors did work for integration, including Tennessee Governor Frank Clement, Florida Governor Leroy Collins, and Kentucky Governor Happy Chandler. But these tended to be the exceptions among Southern Democratic governors rather than the rule, and their admirable behavior was clearly overshadowed by the negative behavior of the others. Democratic leaders long stood in the doorways of schoolhouses and told black children, "We don't want you in here to get the good education that our children are getting." Today, as many black students have become mired in urban schools that are often failing or deteriorating, Democrats are once again standing in the doorway. Consider the situation in Washington, D.C., where 84% of the city's students are black. despite the fact that nearly $13,500 is spent each year on every student in the district, an amount almost twice the national average of $7,500 per student, D.C. schools currently rank among the worst of all schools in the nation. Congress therefore moved to provide help by providing a $7,500 voucher for low-income students who are trapped in failing schools, a voucher they can redeem to attend a better school, a school chosen by that student and his or her parents. When that congressional proposal came to a vote, only 1% of Democrats in Congress supported vouchers and parental choice in education, even though nationally nearly 70% of African Americans with children support educational choice. While Democrats once stood in the doorways of public schools and told black students, "We don't want you in here," they're again standing in the doorways of public schools, this time telling black students that they don't want them out, that they want them to remain in failing schools. It appears that for a century and a half, Democrats have often taken wrong positions on educational opportunity for black Americans. Returning back to the 19th century, Representative John Roy Lynch, a congressman from Mississippi, was mentioned earlier. He had grown up as a slave until freed by the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. Within a decade, he had become Speaker of the House in Mississippi and later received presidential appointments from Republican Presidents Benjamin Harrison and William McKinley. Lynch was appointed an Army officer during the Spanish-American War, earned a law degree, and was the chairman of the Republican Party in Mississippi. He was a leader who served his state and his nation well. In 1884, John Roy Lynch became the first black American to preside over a national political convention, the Republican National Convention in Chicago. Lynch's love for his country was still very evident and reflected the patriotism still evident among African Americans today.
I love the land that gave me birth. I love the stars and stripes. This country is where I intend to live, where I expect to die, to preserve the honor of the national flag, and to maintain perpetually the union of the states. Hundreds, and I may say thousands, of noble, brave, and true-hearted colored men have fought, bled, and died.
While Lynch was the first black American to preside over a national political convention, he was not the last. U.S. Senator Edward Brooke presided over the 1968 National Republican Convention, and Representative J.C. Watts presided over the 2000 National Republican Convention. While three black Americans have presided over national conventions for Republicans, to date, Democrats have never had a black American preside over any of their national Democratic conventions. A further indication that the Democrats were well known for their bloody atrocities against blacks is seen in this illustration from Harper's Weekly showing the major elements and influences of the Democratic Party. The illustration shows the various banners under which Democrats gathered, and those banners included the stars and bars carried by Confederate soldiers, the pro-slavery banner, the Ku Klux Klan banner, the New York Rioters banner referring to the massive riots instigated against blacks by the Democrats in New York leading to the killing and injuring of as many as 1,000 citizens, and finally, the Democratic banner of repudiation, referring to the Democrats' opposition to paying the national debt incurred in putting down the Southern pro-slavery rebellion. These were the various movements led by Democrats, and Americans in that day knew what Democrats stood for. By the 1880s, a movement called Southern Redemption had begun in earnest. Southern Redemption was a political movement to redeem the South from the Reconstruction Acts and the Civil Rights laws passed by Republicans, laws and acts that Southern Democrats believed threatened their version of a Southern society. The best way for the Democratic legislatures to redeem their state was to deprive black Americans of their political rights through the passage of state laws that restricted, removed, or even blatantly violated their civil rights, as well as through the prompt repeal of state laws that had suppressed Klan violence. Representative John Roy Lynch, who not only had helped pass the original federal civil rights laws, but who also witnessed their subsequent violation at the state level throughout the period of Southern Redemption, accurately noted,
"The opposition to civil rights in the South is confined almost exclusively to states under Democratic control."
Democrats understood how important it was to their survival to prevent blacks from voting. In fact, This illustration from that period shows an allegory of the Bible story of Samson, who lost his strength when his hair was cut. In the picture, you see that the woman has used her razor, called the Lost Cause Regained, to cut the black Samson's hair and cause him to lose his strength. And what is his hair? His strength? It is called suffrage, or voting. With the strength, or the vote, of black Americans removed, you see the various Democratic groups and leaders rejoicing in the background, including Confederates, the KKK, pro-slavery forces, and various famous Democratic leaders of that day, including General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who headed the Ku Klux Klan. By the way, notice the phrase, the Democratic barbecue, and that Democrats are burning various books in the foreground, including the Holy Bible. As this illustration confirms, limiting black voting became the major goal for Southern Democrats. Given the explicit federal voting protections that had been established by the 14th and 15th Amendments and by the numerous federal civil rights laws, it was no easy task for Democrats to circumvent these protections. It required devious and cunning methods, and Southern Democratic legislatures implemented almost a dozen separate devices to keep blacks from voting. The first device was the poll tax, a fee paid by a voter before he could vote. The fee was high enough that most poor were unable to pay the tax and therefore were unable to vote. And while some Southern whites were poor, nearly all Southern blacks were poor, having just emerged from slavery and not yet having established an independent means of living. Literacy tests were the second means that Democrats used to disenfranchise blacks. Literacy tests required a voter to demonstrate a certain level of specific knowledge before he could vote. In some cases, the test was 20 pages long for blacks, and those administering the test were white Democrats who nearly always ruled that blacks were illiterate. Grandfather clauses were the third device used to disenfranchise black Americans, allowing only those individuals to vote whose father or grandfather had been registered to vote prior to the passage of the 15th Amendment. This law ensured that poor and illiterate whites could vote, but not blacks. The fourth device was suppressive election procedures. This included the use of multiple ballots. That is, a Republican voter might be required to cast a ballot in up to 8 separate locations, or sometimes to vote for each individual Republican on a ballot at a separate location before the ballot would be counted. Democratic officials often failed to inform black voters of this complicated procedure, and their ballots were therefore disqualified. Democrats also used what were called hide-and-seek polling places, moving voting boxes to unknown locations at the last minute and then posting armed guards in case any black should stumble upon the voting box. The fifth device included the use of so-called black codes, later called Jim Crow laws, to restrict the freedoms and economic opportunities of blacks. Representative Robert Brown Elliott reported,
among the first acts of legislation adopted by the Southern Democratic states were laws which imposed upon the colored race oppressive disabilities and burdens and curtailed their rights in the pursuit of life, liberty, and property to such an extent that their freedom was of little value. Colored citizens were in some states forbidden to even appear in town. They were required to reside on and cultivate the soil without the right to purchase or own it. They were excluded from many occupations, and they were not permitted to testify in any court where a white man was a party.
National observers at that time concluded that the Democratic South was simply trying to institute a new form of slavery through the use of these black codes. Representative Richard Kane of South Carolina agreed.
When the government of the United States had made the black man free, when Congress, in the greatness of its majesty, prepared to give to every class of men their rights, and in reconstructing the southern states, guaranteed to all the people their liberties, Democrats refused to agree to the laws enacted by Congress. You Democrats refused to, and I quote, accept the situation. To recognize the rights of that class of men in this land, you sought to make the Reconstruction Acts a nullity, if possible. You sought to re-enslave the black man by every means in your power.
Southern Democrats went well beyond black codes, however, and also imposed forced segregation. Those Democratic pro-segregation state laws replaced the anti-segregation federal laws passed by Republicans in 1875, and regrettably, those state laws became the legal standard for the next 75 years. The sixth device to disenfranchise black voters was bizarre gerrymandering. Once Democrats regained state legislatures, they began to redraw election lines to make it impossible for Republicans to be elected, thereby preventing blacks from being elected. For example, after Reconstruction, Democrats regained the legislature and began to redraw voting lines so that when the last African American left the Texas State House in 1897, not another one was elected, either as a Republican or a Democrat, for the next 70 years until federal courts struck down the way Texas Democrats drew voting lines. This pattern was typical in other southern states as well. The seventh device used to disenfranchise black voters was that of white-only primaries. When the U.S. Supreme Court finally struck down the state law in 1927, the Democratic Party simply enacted internal Democratic Party policies to prevent blacks from voting in Democratic primaries. In 1935, the Supreme Court upheld this Democratic Party policy of white-only primaries. But in 1944, the court reversed itself and finally struck them down. The eighth device used by Democrats to disenfranchise black Americans was that of physical intimidation and violence. Obviously, the Ku Klux Klan was a leader in this form of violent voter intimidation. As confirmed by Representative James T. Rapier of Alabama,
"Democrats were hunting me down like the partridge on the mount, night and day with their Ku Klux Klan. Simply because I was a Republican and refused to bow at the feet of their Baal."
The ninth device used by Democrats to disenfranchise black voters was the revision of state constitutions to negate many of the rights that had been gained. Other devices employed by Democrats to keep blacks from voting included property ownership requirements. Democrats also used restrictive eligibility requirements, such as residing in a state 2 years before voting, or the paying of excessive annual voter registration fees, fees not struck down by the courts until 1971. Democrats utilized nearly a dozen devices to keep black Americans from voting, something that would have come as no surprise to the earliest African-American civil rights leaders. For example, Representative Joseph Hayne Rainey had earlier declared,
"You cannot expect the Negro to rise while the Democrats are trampling upon him and his rights. We ask you, sir, to do by the Negro as you ought to do by him in justice. If the Democrats are such staunch friends of the Negro, why is it that when new propositions are offered here and elsewhere, looking into the elevation of the colored race and the extension of right and justice to them, why do the Democrats array themselves in unbroken ranks and vote against every such measure?"
The unrelenting Democratic efforts to suppress black voting were successful. For example, in Mississippi in 1892, there were almost 70,000 more blacks than whites in the state. Yet white voters outnumbered black voters by a margin of 8-1. And in Birmingham, of the 18,000 blacks who lived in that city at the turn of the century, only 30 were eligible to vote. In Texas, the number of black voters fell from 100,000 to only 5,000. The number of black voters in Alabama and Florida was reduced by nearly 90%. And by the 1940s, only 5% of blacks in the South were registered to vote. In fact, in 1965 in Selma, Alabama, a city with more black residents than white residents, the voting rolls were 99% white and only 1% black. Clearly, Democratic voter suppression efforts had been successful. Returning to the 1800s, recall that Democrats regained partial control of Congress in 1876. That partial control continued for the next 16 years until 1893, when Democrat Grover Cleveland was elected as president and Democrats gained control of both the House and the Senate. For the first time since Abraham Lincoln, the Democrats had full control of the lawmaking process. Given their new powers, what did Democrats do to assist civil rights? Nothing. Not a single civil rights law was passed by Democrats during that time. In fact, the Democrats immediately passed laws repealing civil rights laws that had not yet been struck down by the Supreme Court. Specifically, Democrats repealed the laws protecting black voting rights as well as those punishing Klan violence. By 1900, Democrats actually began actively to seek the repeal of the 14th and 15th Amendments. In 1901, at the same time that Democrats were seeking to roll back the Civil Rights Amendments to the Constitution, Republican President Teddy Roosevelt raised the ire of many Democrats by inviting Booker T. Washington to the White House. And Washington became the first African American to dine with the president at the White House. While Booker T. Washington's wise counsel was snubbed by Democratic President Woodrow Wilson, it was gladly sought by three Republican presidents for whom he served as advisor, including William Taft, William McKinley, and Teddy Roosevelt.
All right, here we go. We're about to go to part 9, 10, 11, 12. Hope y'all enjoying it. Now we're about to get into the turn of the century. We was dealing with the past in 1800s, so I know a lot of y'all like to say, that's in the past, even though Teddy Roosevelt, that is the past. But we're going to bring it up to Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Reagan, everybody. Here we go. Hold on, everyone. Lord have mercy.
In 1915, the pro-Klan movie was released. It became a recruiting tool to help the Klan reach its peak membership of almost 2 million. In 1915, the pro-Klan movie, Birth of a Nation, was released. It became a recruiting tool to help the Klan reach its peak membership of almost 2 million. That film incorporated material from Democrat Woodrow Wilson's History of the American People, including Wilson's latent support for the Klan and its abominable practice of Southern redemption. President Woodrow Wilson even showed this racist Klan recruiting film at the White House, the first film ever shown at the White House. Wilson also enacted pro-segregation policies within his administration. By the way, much attention has been focused in state and federal legislatures on reparations proposals, that is, on the seeking of government payments to African Americans for the historical violation of their civil rights. Yet given the political history of African Americans, it might be much more appropriate if those demands for reparations were made to the Democrat Party rather than to the federal government. Returning to the historical timeline, by 1932, Republican Herbert Hoover had finished his first term as president and was running for re-election. His challenger was Democrat Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In that election, Roosevelt, in an unusual move, invited black Americans to vote Democratic in the elections. Roosevelt understood his party, however, and made only subtle overtures to black Americans while avoiding any overt civil rights promises. So how did black Americans respond to Roosevelt's invitation to join the Democrats? They printed and distributed this handbill. At the bottom, its caption reads, "Who's a Democrat?" Most would assume this statement to be a question. However, it's not. It's a declaration rather than a question. Notice the exclamation mark rather than the question mark at the end of the caption. So what statement was being made here about the Democrats? Examine the picture. A young black boy gazing prayerfully up toward heaven as if seeking hope or help. At his foot is a newspaper. Notice the title on the paper, "Lynch, Two More in Florida." That headline referred to two recent lynchings in Florida, those of Richard and Charles Smoke on August 28, 1931. For black Americans in that day, reminding them of lynchings was an upset about Democrats. Of all forms of violent intimidation, lynchings were by far the most effective. Between 1882 and 1964, 4,743 individuals were lynched. 3,446 blacks and 1,297 whites. Republicans often led the efforts to pass federal anti-lynching laws, and their platforms consistently called for a ban on lynching. But Democrats successfully blocked those bills, and the Democratic platforms never did condemn lynchings. The accounts of lynchings are not just the lore of ancient American history. Many alive today still vividly remember those horrid occurrences, and many were personally and directly impacted by lynchings. One such individual is the Reverend Charles Jackson of Houston. Reverend Jackson is well known across the nation as one of its most successful ministers. He was the first pastor in America, the first pastor of any color, to be nationally televised from the pulpit on a weekly basis. He also built a large, successful megachurch in Houston, the Pleasant Grove Missionary Baptist Church, with more than 5,000 families. Pastor Jackson has preached across the world, has helped start hundreds of churches in America and abroad, and has traveled to foreign nations in company with the U.S. president. But Reverend Jackson's beginnings were very humble. He was raised in East Texas. One night, a terrified young black boy came running up to their house. Pastor Jackson's grandfather went out onto the front porch to defend the young man.
What's going on, son?
Yeah. They gonna sting me up, that's what they gonna do.
Come down. Just get on in here. Come on.
Look, they coming up. I can't stay here with you.
You still get a face full of buckshot.
I can't put you through this. Look, they'll kill me, and they'll bring your house down and everybody in. I gotta go. Jackson handled this incident that so early shaped his own life and that of his family, in the same way that so many others from that era and from previous eras handled the problem, relying on their faith in God, which has always been at the core of the African-American community. They forgave their tormentors and oppressors. Understandably, these events etched vivid, indelible pictures in the mind of Pastor Jackson's mother, who had witnessed the lynching and whose own sister had been raped and murdered by the mob. Mrs. Jackson later became pregnant, but did not know at that time whether her unborn child was a boy or a girl. Nevertheless, she faithfully prayed over that unborn child every day.
Lord, if this baby be a boy, don't let him hang from a bridge.
That unborn child for whom she faithfully prayed was Pastor Jackson. Reverend Richard Allen, like so many black Americans before and after him, provides an excellent example. He had been a slave in Delaware, and while only a boy, he was sold separately from his mother, whom he never saw again. While still a slave, Allen became a Christian and began to preach on his and on neighboring plantations. He eventually obtained his freedom, served in the American Revolution, became a minister, and then founded the AME denomination. Despite the grief and tragedy that he had personally experienced in his own life, he understood that bitterness only harms one of the two parties involved, and quite frankly, it harms the innocent party rather than the guilty one. Therefore, Reverend Allen wisely admonished those who had been mistreated,
"Let no rancor or ill will lodge in your heart for any bad treatment you may have received from him. If you do, you transgress against God, who will not hold you guilty. He would not suffer it even in his beloved people, Israel. And you think he will allow it unto us? I am sorry to say that too many think more of the evil than of the good they have received."
Reverend Jackson, like so many black Americans before and after him, followed the teachings of Christianity and forgave his persecutors, holding no bitterness or ill will even to this day. Many today are unaware of how much pain there was and how real lynching was in recent generations, generations still alive right now. Recall from the lynching numbers that even though almost 5,000 Americans were lynched, black Americans were lynched at a rate almost three times higher than whites.
Why? According to Representative John Roy Lynch,
more colored than white men are thus persecuted simply because they constitute in larger numbers the opposition to the Democratic Party.
Representative Richard Kane agreed.
The bad blood of the South comes because the Negroes are Republicans. If they would only cease to be Republicans and vote the straight-out Democratic ticket, there would be no trouble. Then the bad blood would just seep entirely out of sight.
If you only vote the straight Democratic ticket, what do you think about that?
While the opposition of Democrats to African Americans was vividly demonstrated by lynchings, that opposition went beyond lynchings and included every possible form of obstruction to civil rights in general. This fact is widely known by black Americans, as confirmed by Representative Joseph Hayne Rainey.
You gentlemen on the Democratic side of the House have voted against all the amendments of the Constitution and the civil rights laws enforcing the same. Why did you do it? I answer, because those measures had a tendency to give the poor Negro his just rights and give him freedom of speech, freedom of action, and the opportunity for education that he might elevate himself to the dignity of manhood. Now you come and say to us that you are our best friends. We would that we could look upon you as such. We would that your votes recorded from day to day only demonstrated, but your votes and your actions prove to the Negroes of the entire country that the Democrats are in opposition to them. And if the Democrats could have their way, our race would have no foothold here. The Democratic Party may rule us. They may court us and try to get us to worship at their shrine, but I will tell the gentlemen that we are Republicans by instinct. And we will be Republicans as long as God will allow our proper senses to hold sway over us.
Frederick Douglass agreed. In fact, he recommended
each colored voter of the state should say in scripture phrase, may my hand forget its cunning and my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth if ever I raise my voice or give my vote for the nominees of the Democratic Party.
Given the long historical record of Democrats opposing black Americans prior to 1932, it was amazing that in that election that Roosevelt should reach out for black votes. So this handbill, to remind black voters of who the Democrats were, simply reminded them of lynchings. Not surprisingly then, in that 1932 presidential election, incumbent Republican President Herbert Hoover received more than three-fourths of the black vote over Democratic challenger Franklin D. Roosevelt. Despite the strong and united opposition of black Americans, Roosevelt narrowly won that election, and he did genuinely begin to try to make some changes in the direction of his Democratic Party. It was under Roosevelt that Democrats, for the very first time, placed language in their platform calling for an end to racial discrimination. Yet despite the new language in their platform, Democrats in Congress still killed every piece of civil rights legislation introduced in that era. A Democratic leader much more courageous than Franklin Roosevelt was President Harry S. Truman, perhaps the first national Democratic leader vigorously to advocate for strong civil rights protections. Despite his noble goals, Truman, like FDR before him, learned that it was difficult for rank-and-file Democrats to reshape their long-held views on race. The depth of this Democratic opposition was apparent in Texas when Democratic candidate for governor, Ma Ferguson, dared to criticize the Klan's role in the Southern Democratic Party. She was directly opposed in the Democratic primary with a Klan candidate, thus costing her the widespread cohesive support of the Texas Democratic Party. In fact, a number of Klansmen ran on the various Democratic tickets in that era and were elected. Despite the existence of the Klan and other racist groups within the Democratic Party, Truman worked boldly and openly to change his party. In 1946, he became the first modern president to institute a comprehensive review of race relations, and he introduced an aggressive 10-point civil rights legislative package that included an anti-lynching law, a ban on the poll tax, and desegregation of the military.
But Democrats, again, killed all of his proposals, including his proposed Civil Rights Commission. The president following Democrat Harry Truman was World War II hero Republican Dwight D. Eisenhower, elected in 1952. Eisenhower was well aware of the Southern Democratic congressional commitment to racial segregation. Understanding that it would be difficult to make substantial changes in law and that the progress would be slow at best, Eisenhower determined to eliminate racial discrimination in all areas under his authority. He therefore issued executive orders halting segregation in the District of Columbia, the military, and federal agencies. Furthermore, he was the first president to appoint a black American, Frederick Morrill, to an executive position on the White House staff. And although he also proposed a vigorous civil rights legislative protection plan for blacks in the Southern Democratic states, Democrats in Congress were able to prevent any legislative progress. Given his pro-civil rights record, it is not surprising that in his 1956 re-election, Eisenhower, like Republican presidents before him, received significant support from black voters. After his re-election, Eisenhower continued his civil rights efforts. In 1957, he proposed a bold civil rights bill to increase black voting rights and protections, proposals promptly blocked by Democratic Senator James Eastland of Mississippi, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. In fact, Eastland is credited with killing every civil rights bill that came before his committee in the 1950s, and his committee was literally known as the burial ground for civil rights legislation in the U.S. Senate. The stiff Democratic opposition in the Senate resulted in a very watered-down version of Eisenhower's original bill. Yet despite the fact that the bill was much weaker than introduced, Eisenhower did succeed in creating a civil rights division within the U.S. Justice Department, as had earlier been proposed by his predecessor, President Truman. This division subsequently played a prominent role in helping secure civil rights in the South during the 1960s and 1970s. That law also started a civil rights commission that became instrumental in publicizing the effects of Southern segregation and racial oppression. In 1959, Eisenhower presented a second civil rights bill to Congress. That bill was met with unyielding opposition in the House by Democratic Representative Howard Smith of Virginia, chairman of the House Rules Committee. In fact, Smith would actually disappear from Congress for weeks on end simply to keep his committee from acting on the civil rights bill. Democratic House member Emanuel Seller of New York, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, exerted extraordinary effort to move the bill forward even though he was strongly opposed by other members within his own party. When the bill finally passed the House and arrived in the Senate, it was gutted by Democrats before being passed into law, once again preventing the federal government from intervening on behalf of black Americans whose civil rights were being violated in the South. Democrat John F. Kennedy was elected president in 1960. Following the violent racial discord in Birmingham in 1963, Kennedy did send a major civil rights bill to Congress, a bill based on the findings of Eisenhower's 1957 Civil Rights Commission. Kennedy worked aggressively for the passage of that civil rights bill, but was tragically assassinated before he could see its success. Democratic successor Lyndon Johnson picked up the civil rights measure, but like his predecessors, he faced stiff opposition from his own party. In fact, Democratic Senators Robert Byrd of West Virginia and Richard Russell of Georgia led the opposition against the 1964 Civil Rights Act, including lengthy and extended filibuster speeches. Republican Senator Everett Dirksen resurrected language proposed by Eisenhower's Attorney General in 1960, thus breaking the filibuster of the Civil Rights Bill and allowing Johnson to sign into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964, followed by the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Perhaps the most recognizable civil rights leader of that era was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Like Frederick Douglass, the great civil rights leader of the previous century, Dr. King was also a Christian minister of the gospel. He was with President Johnson when the famous Civil Rights Bill was signed into law. These two important civil rights acts were signed into law under a Democratic president, but it was the Republicans in Congress who made possible the passage of both acts, for Johnson had been unable to garner sufficient Democratic support to pass either bill. At that time, Democrats had 315 members in Congress, almost two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate. President Johnson needed only a simple majority, only 269 votes to get those bills passed. But out of the 315 Democrats, only 198 voted for the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Acts. Democrats had it completely within their power to pass those bills, but they did not. Republicans overwhelmingly came to the aid of Democrat President Johnson. If not for the strong support of Republicans, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965 would never have become law, not to mention the fact that the heart of both bills came from the work of Republican President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Other significant progress in civil rights had also been made in 1964. For in addition to the Civil Rights Act, it was that same year that the passage of the 24th Amendment to the Constitution abolishing the poll tax had occurred. Significantly, a repeal of the poll tax had been proposed on at least 14 previous occasions, and on five of those occasions, the House had actually passed a ban, but each time, the Senate Democrats had kept the poll tax alive. It was nearly 85 years after the first poll tax was instituted by Democrats before the ban on the poll tax was finally approved by the Senate. And of the 16 senators who wanted to keep the poll tax alive, 15 of them were Democrats. The positive impact of these changes was both obvious and immediate. Within a year, 450,000 new Southern blacks were successfully registered to vote. In Mississippi, voter registration of black Americans rose from only 5% in 1960 to 60% by 1968, and the number of blacks serving in federal and state legislatures rose from only 2 in 1965 to 160 by 1990. African Americans made their earliest and some of their most significant political and civil rights gains while affiliated with the Republican Party, and that progress is still continuing in this generation. Consider the Texas election in which African-American Ron Kirk, former mayor of Dallas, was running for a U.S. Senate seat. When Kirk lost that election, voices across the nation asserted that the South was still too racist to elect a minority on a statewide ballot. What they failed to mention was that in that same election, three African-Americans were elected to statewide office on the very same statewide ballot as Kirk. But those three were elected as Republicans rather than Democrats. Apparently, Texas became the first state in American history to elect three black Americans to statewide office. But since they were all Republicans, that story simply was not reported. And in that same election cycle, black Americans were elected to statewide office in other states as well, including a black lieutenant governor in Ohio and another in Maryland, both as Republicans. An important point is illustrated by these recent elections and by scores before them. In democratically controlled states, rarely are African Americans elected statewide, with the exception of U.S. senators in Illinois and a governor in Virginia. And most African American Democratic members of Congress usually are elected only from minority districts. That is, Democratic districts where minority voters make the majority rather than where there's a Democratic majority of white voters. On the other hand, African American Republicans are usually elected statewide in Republican states, or in congressional districts with large white majorities, such as when J.C. Watts was elected to Congress as a Republican in a district with only 9% African-American voters. Perhaps this explains why Frederick Douglass, a century ago, reminded black Americans,
"For colored voters, the Republican Party is the ship, all else is the sea."
The political history of African-Americans has often proved Douglass right. Yet no one from any background, whether a political, religious, or racial background, should ever love any political party above principle. Although history is clear that there have been major differences in how political parties treated black Americans, neither party is completely blameless in all of its actions, nor have all the leaders in a party always been good or always been bad. Understanding this truth, Representative Robert Brown Elliott, even though he was a strong Republican leader in his day, wisely advised,
"I am a slave to principles. I call no political party master. I have ever most sincerely embraced the democratic and representative ideal, not indeed as represented or professed by any political party, but by its true significance as transfigured in the Declaration of Independence and in the injunctions of Christianity."
Eliot's admonition is wise. Align with political candidates that conform to what he called the injunctions of Christianity. Republican Frederick Douglass, who served as a minister of the gospel, had agreed, declaring,
I have one great political idea. The idea is an old one. It's widely and generally assented to. Nevertheless, it is very generally trampled upon and disregarded. The best expression of it I found in the Bible. It is, in substance, righteousness exalted a nation. Sin is a reproach to any people. Proverbs 14 and 34. Now, this constitutes my politics, the negative and positive of my politics, and the whole of my politics. I feel it my duty to do all in my power to infuse this idea into the public mind that it may be practiced.
Douglass was right. As citizens, we must vote righteously. And by the way, this first assumes that we are voting. This responsibility to vote and to vote righteously has been made clear from generation to generation. One such voice heralding this responsibility was that of Charles Finney. Finney was a famous American revivalist, a leader in the American revival movement called the Second Great Awakening. He was also the president of a college that even decades before the Civil War admitted both black and white students as equals. In fact, the students from the college where Reverend Finney was president not only became some of the most active conductors of the Underground Railroad, but also started several of America's black colleges and universities. Reverend Finney wisely admonished,
the time has come that Christians must vote for honest men and take consistent ground in politics. Christians have been exceedingly guilty in this manner, but the time has come when they must act differently. Christians seem to act as if they think God does not see what they do in politics, but I tell you, he does see it, and he will bless or curse this nation according to the course Christians take in politics.
So when voting, no vote should be cast solely on the basis of any party. The values of each individual candidate must be examined using the standard of biblical righteousness cited by Frederick Douglass, the principles of Christianity as cited by Robert Brown Elliott, and an awareness that voters will answer to God for their vote, as pointed out by the Reverend Charles Finney. An illustration of this important principle is seen in the life of Dr. Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration who worked with the Reverend Richard Allen to found the AME Church. Dr. Rush served in the presidential administrations of three different presidents, each of whom was from a different political party. How could he do this? What was his own party affiliation? He once explained,
I have been alternately called an aristocrat and a Democrat. I am neither. I am a Christocrat. I believe all power will always fail of producing order and happiness in the hands of man. He alone, who created and redeemed man, is qualified to govern him.
Very simply, Benjamin Rush didn't care what a party called itself. When he found someone who stood for God's principles, he would stand with him, no matter the party. The love of correct principles, and not the love of a party, must be the key to our political involvement. What legacy of faith and politics will we leave for the next generation? Obviously, the choice is ours. But having this choice, we should heed the warning delivered to citizens in 1803 by the Reverend Matthias Burnett.
Consider well the important trust which God has put in your hands. To God and posterity,
you are accountable for your rights and your rulers.
Let not your children have reason to curse you for giving up those rights and prostrating those institutions which your fathers have delivered to you.
Leaders for generations have wisely recognized that the quality of our government depends more upon the quality and character of our leaders than upon any other factor. And they also understood that we were responsible for choosing leaders of character and righteousness, just as Frederick Douglass reminded voters of this truth based on Proverbs 14:34. So too did the Reverend Francis Grimke. Francis Grimke was born to a slave mother in 1850 in South Carolina, and served as a valet in the Confederate Army until emancipation. After the war, he attended Lincoln University, Howard University, and Princeton Theological Seminary, then became minister of the 15th Street Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C., the same church earlier pastored by the Reverend Henry Highland Garnett. Grimke was also one of the forces behind the formation of the NAACP, and in a sermon delivered on Sunday, March the 7th, 1909, Reverend Grimke admonished his hearers on their civic responsibilities based on God's righteousness.
The stars and stripes, the old flag, will float over all these states.
Yeah.
If the time ever comes when we shall go to pieces, it will be from inward corruption.
Amen.
From the disregard of right principles. From losing sight of the fact that righteousness exalteth a nation.
Yeah.
But that sin is a reproach to any people.
Amen.
The secession of the southern states in 1860 was a small matter with the secession of the Union itself from the great principles enunciated in the Declaration of Independence,
yeah,
in the Golden Rule,
yeah,
in the Ten Commandments,
yeah,
in the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
Unless we hold and hold firmly,
yeah,
to these great fundamental principles,
right,
of righteousness.
Yeah.
Our union will only be a covenant with death and an agreement with hell.
Yeah.
If it continues to exist, it will be a curse and not a blessing.
Compelling video is got nation and its technology board.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Early.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I'm loving you more each day. But the word got in my way.
Can't sing no more sad songs. Hey, Curtis, this is supposed to be your night, right? Let's have some happy time. Brian, I'm gonna give you a count off. Rest of y'all come in when I check, right?
What the hell's he doing?
1, 2, 3, hit me, bop, bop, bop it out of me, bop, bop, bop. Yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me.
Yeah.
get some shelter. Oh yeah, I'm gonna fade away. Oh yeah, it's just a shot away. Just a shot away. Oh yeah, it's just a shot away. It's just a shot away. It's just a shot away.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man, but as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, God's going to cut you down. Well, that's my two-part tribute to Black American history. Now, I hope y'all didn't think it was just a Republican slant to it. Well, it's not a Republican slant to it if you heard the commentary. You vote on which party you want to vote on. You go on which ideology you want to go on. You float with what you want to float with. But what I was trying to produce to you was a portrait of American history. Now, you might thought it was Republican propaganda, but if you look at American history, you have to follow it by the plight of the African American in America.
because you go from the slave trade, I mean, even from the Civil War, I mean, not Civil War, the American Revolution, but that was yesterday if you heard it. I'm going to try to run the whole show back next week for those who missed it, play the whole entire piece by piece uninterrupted. But you cannot erase history, and those who do not know the history are doomed to repeat it. That's all, you know. Not trying to front on Democrats, you know, it's the truth. But, you know, I'm not trying to make everybody flip the trip. But like the man said, you vote on what you want to vote on. You vote on your interest and what best suits you. Now, why play my little sooner or later God's going to cut you down? Because I'm switching topics. I'm switching topics. We're going to switch it to this lane. We're going to switch it to this lane. Blood diamonds in Zimbabwe. Mel Reynolds been busted on porno charges. What does that mean here in Chicago? There are business people that are here in the city that are caught up in the blood diamonds because they're doing business with Zimbabwe, Mugabe, which is against the law. Now, earlier, I've been talking about Danny Davis and the guy I'm running against, Bobby Rush, them having dealings with Mugabe. And we're going to see how that plays out. But then again, I'm going to switch topics and switch lanes again. Pat Quinn. Pat Quinn got caught over here, everybody, in Chicago, Illinois, with a $52 million slush fund investigation. Why am I tripping on this $52 million slush fund investigation? Because in the $52 million slush fund investigation, he became governor by, at the last minute, doling out money to a bunch of people to get elected. Now, that's being investigated. Now, Rob Blagojevich is in jail just for talking about hitting people up with money. This guy took some federal money and passed it out just to get elected. We're going to talk about that because that affects the aldermen here in the city. And by affecting the aldermen here in the city, then it's going to be hard for them to go out and probably, you know, even campaign against your guy. But then we get my man Howard Brookins, who gets caught up just the other day. Howard Brookins, how you going to get caught up taking a $7,500 bribe to open up a liquor license in your ward? Come on, homie. You're cool. So, with all that going on, oh, why am I mentioning Howard Brookins in this situation? Because Howard Brookins was the next in line to place Bobby Rush if anything happened to Bobby Rush, but now he's got knocked off the pedestal. We got 2 weeks for the election. You can go in and punch 31 for your boy Jimmy Lee for the early voters out here in the 1st Congressional District. You can go in and get an early ballot right there if you're too scared to go down there on election day and pull the ticket. You can go right there where ain't nobody watching to your local library and punch 31 for your boy Jimmy Lee. And you can follow me on Twitter at Tillman2014 at Twitter. You can follow me there. Let me see what else, because you can run on for a long time. You can run on for a long time, but one by one by one by one. Now, Robert Gorevich is all this time. He didn't do nothing. Sandy about to go to jail in a couple of months. Jesse get out in a couple of months. It's funny. Jesse gets out. Bobby goes in. Because, you know, what y'all can do this is y'all think I'm just pop-shotting. Google Congressman Bobby Rush, Zimbabwe. Also Google Congressman Bobby Rush investigations. And check that out. Or Google LZ Higginbottom / Mel Reynolds, blood diamonds. Google Howard Brookins bribery. Google Pat Quinn slush fund punch Tillman 31. Let me get in. I got these callers calling. Let me bring in my girl from D.C. who should vote after the tea ballot for a man, Jimmy Lee. What's going on?
Hey, how are you?
I can't complain, Dana. What's going on with yourself?
Nothing much. Just trying to, you know, get everything together.
Well, that's how we got to do it. Get everything together. It's early voting here in the Shy. You know, my numbers are looking good. Somebody voted for me, so I think I'm up by one vote. So I think the competition can't shut me down.
You can count me. Count me in for two.
Right. You know, so because it's down to the stretch. You know, I believe the Most High has a black man's back because, Dana, everything is falling in line for a man. I mean, I can't fall in line for a man. You know, I mean, listen, Google, well, hold on. Have you heard the situation about the Congressman Mel Reynolds here in Chicago got caught in Zimbabwe over some pornography charges? Have you heard that story?
No.
Well, Dana, you just gave me my show for Monday. My show for Monday is going to be what the F is going on. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I said what the F is going on because I told Dorothy I was giving up the F-bomb for Lent. So in the month of Lent, we're going to have Monday show what the F is going on here in the shot.
And what does F stand for?
Filth, flying, and filth. Filth, flying, and filth.
Filth, flying, filth, and flim-flam.
Whatever my man Bill Cosby said, everybody get off Bill Cosby because everybody jumping on Bill Cosby because he's saying he don't know what these people are talking about, man. You cannot talk about Bill Cosby. He has a right to sit and complain because he's the only individual that's trying to keep HBCUs alive. And if you don't know what an HBCU is, that's historical black universities because not to be shooting your president down, but since the president got in office, HBCU has been a dying breed because funding has stopped going to them. You know, another thing the Democratic Party been doing, so when we get a Democratic black president, they cut funding out of black colleges. It's a lot, but that's another story in itself. We're hanging on by a string. When colleges like Morehouse and Howard University, staples of the black community, are in dire strait, you know something is wrong. Morehouse has brought all the great thinkers throughout American history. People have changed the world that came from Morehouse. People have changed the world that came from Howard. Howard University that changed the civil rights laws. It was those who came out of black university that changed all the rights, that gave us all the rights that we have right now. It's those thinkers, those learned mind individuals, those leaders of the 60s and 70s. Now those institutions are a threat. But that's just me on my high horse, Dana, because it is, like I said, early voting season, and I think I'm looking good. And I'm trying to get ready for my victory party on March 18th. That's March 18th, 318, everybody. That's 318. That's 9, 10, 11, 12 on your dial. And let's see, wow, that's a perfect number. 318. 1 and 8 is 9. Add 3, that's 12. Then 1 and 2 is 3. 3 makes it all perfectly. So on March
18th. And that's not any
flim-flam. Not a flim-flam, kid. Ain't a flim-flam. It's a flim-flam that by March 18th, 19th, we wake up and Jimmy Lee will be the Republican nominee. And I'll be ready to attack my opponent because after the 19th, the gloves come on. Not go off. The gloves go on. I'm putting my boxing gloves on. I ain't trying to break my knuckles. The gloves stay on because I've been sitting here with my hands tied down, being very quiet, and everybody's been campaigning. You know, I'm trying to help everybody campaign. I'm knocking on the door doing. I'm trying to do my little power part. But, man, I just can't wait for me to get in the game. You know, I'm just waiting to get in the game so effing bad. That sounds kind of smooth. I can say that. So effing bad. So, yeah. What's been going on with you, Dan? Yeah, I've been off the air because I've been campaigning, but I'm pretty soon I'm going to set up these guest hosts to come in and fill in with programming. But I don't know how long you've been on. What do you think about what you heard on my little what I was playing my little documentary? What do you think about that?
I heard half of it, and it did seem to be a little slanted. You know, honestly, some of these things that you're playing bring out some interesting facts, but I also think that some of them, they tend to kind of water down the events or not appropriately apply the events to the past.
Well, what was happening then is what does not take place in American history is you don't put the politics, you don't put the party behind the president. So when you look at history and history books and you see all the things that was done, what presidents have done, this and that, a party is never placed behind them. You know, and that was like, I ain't going to say that's dumbing down or just racist because parties don't mean nothing. But then again, when you come to like today's history, you have people feeling that the Democrats were fought the Republicans for slavery, and the Republicans were the ones that had blacks and slaves. If you look back at history, you say the Republicans were the ones hosing blacks down. We look back at how history rewrites itself by not teaching itself. It's up to the person that would interpret it. When the children don't know what's going on, it'd be difficult for them to interpret it. You know, like knowing the teachings of Frederick Douglass, something somebody, you know, people don't know nothing about no more. Frederick Douglass was a staple when I was coming up in Black History Month, but you ask the kid today who's Frederick Douglass, I bet they can tell you. You know, but that's because you got dumbing down our history, all the people that gained. Let me give you an example. The Texas Republican Party was formed by 123 blacks and 15 whites, Texas. The Mississippi Republican Party was formed by 162 blacks and 15 whites. The Georgia Republican Party, 92 blacks, 12 whites. I can go to the all the Republican parties of the South, so-called racist party, everybody say, when you look at the history, it's formed by African-Americans. You know, ain't no ifs, ands, or buts to it. That's just, you know, history. I'm like, yeah, what does that mean? That don't mean nothing. It means a whole lot. You know, it means a whole lot. It means that, you know, that when you look at the power that blacks had at a time and the strides we gained, you look at what party or what party was affiliated we got them through. By erasing that, you tend to dumb down America. But it's not about party. It's about you vote your principles at that time because, evidentially, blacks flipped over. Even though a black was not elected in the South until 1973, Andrew Young and Barbara Jordan was the first two in 1973. So now you get all those blacks in the South that's Democrats now, but, hey, they didn't get elected since 1973. Blacks were in the North for years, you know, leading. But that's how things were down there. You know, but they was Democrats. I mean, hey, it was like the gerrymandering right now. Democrats are gerrymandering every district. People want to say that the Republicans gerrymandering district, but in every black district in every urban area, it's gerrymandered, so a Democrat will always win. You know, so no matter what you do, districts are gerrymandered for those people who want to get elected, you know, and the way they want to get elected. You know, it's just how people just don't, if you don't know, if you don't know, like I said, the history, you like, we can have an argument because most blacks will be staunch Democrats because it's like a conversion religion. But we can have an argument, nah, Democrats, this and that. And we're looking at what's in our face now. But if we look at what's in our face now, all the Democratic black officials that we have, and then we look at the conditions of our situation, I mean, who we have to blame? I mean, we have power right now. We have leaders. But we can sit back and you can go back and forth where we're tired of electing all these people. But we're not looking at retaliating these people from this party because we're looking at the same people from the same party getting the same results because we just brainwashed. Like, I was reading this article today. How much time I got? I was reading this article today on Run, Jesse, Run. And I was telling everybody, my speech before was when blacks flipped the script. Everybody say Roosevelt. I should say around Carter, Jimmy Carter. But now I'm looking at it. It was Jesse Jackson because that's when blacks of our parents' generation, not our generation, of our parents' generation. That's when they gave in to the Democratic Party because they believe that finally this party has changed because they are even allowing somebody black to be even nominated in their party. Now, that was a big revolutionary change. And this is why Jesse Jackson had a lot of power in the Democratic Party because he did something real big. You know, because until then, our votes, we were still flipping both ways where we was maximizing our power. But until we saw that Jesse Jackson had an opportunity, Run, Jesse, Run, 84. Win, Jesse, Win, 88. Maybe, Jesse, maybe, 91, 92. But at that time, that's like 12 years of a generation of blacks going on. Then you get Clinton coming in, who's hooking up our generation to make sure we stay in there because he's so cool and so hip. Not knowing that all the laws that was chiseled by, but our amazement still dazzled by Jesse Jackson and what? During all that time, he had carte blanche to the White House. We always saw him out there. He was our spokesperson. He made sure that we vote Democrat, stay out the bushes, all his rhetoric. That's not negative speaking, but all his rhetoric was the talking points of the tone, you know. But this is how they showed how insignificant Jesse Jackson was or is. They removed him and replaced him with Al Sharpton, a nobody who's stupid. And now you have people going around saying that he's a brilliant man, he's a genius. But you can't even check the man's pedigree and see what he has done for African Americans. What the hell? Tawana Brawley lied. And admitted that she lied. That's the only thing about the man of justice. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, excuse me, what the F? But you got to examine, and I'm not going to say the okey-doke or the quote-unquote Dana word of the day, the flim-flam and flirm, the flim-flam. But you got to look at when. But if you can go back in 84, Danny, you remember how enthused you was when Jesse Jackson was even thinking about it. You got pumped up. You was charged. It did a lot to all of us. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And that's when it had us. By the time we got to Bill Clinton, he kept us. You know? And the reason why we hate George Bush is because Jesse Jackson told us hate George Bush. Even though Al Gore could have stopped George Bush from being president because he presided over the Senate, and he could have said that the law was not, he could have cast a vote, but he did not. He denied it. But given Al Gore dead, he was a segregationist and voted against blacks regardless. You can see how that goes back that route regardless of the fact. Because Al Gore was no cows out on Negroes anyway. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, he wasn't trying to do it. But we're not going to look at it like that. But it's just when you see things in black and white or white and black, not party.
But see, here's what I find interesting. It's like, here, and the way it was a little scary is because all of these things that you tell about, and which I understand, I get that you're a Republican, but the facts are that you know that these same conditions were even worse as it pertains to Republicans. I mean, you have people like Donald Trump as recently as last year, you know,
But Donald Trump is a man. Yeah. He'll run nothing. He'll make no law.
What he does is he does influence decisions.
Donald Trump does not influence no decisions. He's a man on the TV show, and everybody looking at him as a clown. No one takes Donald Trump serious. No one. He just got money on TV and make everybody think he's something because he came on TV. He's like somebody said, he's a popular culture figure.
What about Newt Gingrich?
Well, you had to get Newt Gingrich credit because once upon a time, Newt Gingrich sat in the third most powerful position in the House, being Speaker of the House. But Newt Gingrich had bounced off. Newt Gingrich got humiliated and embarrassed. Newt Gingrich had kicked out by his own Republican Party. The Republican Party kicked Newt Gingrich out because he couldn't maintain a majority in the House. So as soon as Bill Clinton played him, he shut the government down. The Republicans kicked him out. People fail to realize about Newt Gingrich and the Republican Party. When Newt Gingrich shut the government down, and Republicans lost votes because he shut the government down, they got rid of him. Point blank. I mean, everybody wants to see like he's the face of the party, but he got kicked out. Not kicked out of the party, but kicked out of leadership position because of that. You know, I go to George Bush. People ain't got no money now. His tax time coming around. You remember George, every time people paid their taxes, George Bush gave an extra refund check to those who paid taxes, another stimulus check. People had money during that time period. He gave you extra refund. You know, here we go right now. Let me tell you about being broke. Here we go right now. You can't extend unemployment. You say we ain't got no money. We ain't got no money, Obama. You know we ain't got no money, but you about to give $1 billion to Ukraine. We ain't got no money here. We ain't got no jobs here. We about to give $1 billion to Ukraine. I'm just saying. See, these are things we're not even paying attention to, you know. I'm just saying. I mean, it's easy to, and this is where black, our generation, and we pass it on to our next generation, we are judging our politics by television instead of by investigating our own selves and researching. We want instant answers, instant gratification, instant talking points. We get our talking points from television because whoever the talking point man put the shit out, put the stuff out there, we receive it, and we repeat it to the person who might be different in politics against us. We go back and back like Hannity and Cones, and then that's the whole deal, and we end up mimicking the things that we see. You know, my parts, I can go back and forth and back. I don't toe the party line. The party don't back Jimmy Lee. You know, I ain't a Republican because, you know, the party don't back Jimmy Lee. You know, like some of the things that the man said in the dissertation, and like my man Frederick Douglass said, I'm backing this party because of some moral values that I believe in. That's just me. And some things that I talk. I'm not a hypocrite. Some things that I might spit out there, I can't be one party on some things that I rock with, and you know, I just can't do that. You know, I believe in.
I will say this, Jimmy. One thing that I appreciate, because you know, I don't believe in. I'm not brand loyal. I am truth loyal. You see what I'm saying? And
right.
So, just like I said to you,
like
I don't
most blacks,
that all, huh? I don't believe
most blacks
that
are truth loyal.
I don't believe that all Democrats are good, nor do I believe that all Republicans are bad. I think that it is more important that the person will represent the constituents and do what is right by the people. And one thing I can say is that you have consistently and continuously brought awareness. You see what I mean? You brought awareness even when people, when others won't. And so I appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that regardless, you know, how many times I come up here saying, saying, well, what about this and what about that? You continuously report the facts. And the other thing is that you have consistently shown that your interest is in helping people. And that, my friend, is admirable.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. And I wish I could cut that for a commercial. You know what I'm saying? Let that roll like that. And that got me all choked up. And that's not even on these white owls. But the point I'm saying is this, that you're correct. I appreciate that sentiment. And, you know, I have no words to go behind that. But it's all politics is local. And when we look on TV, we see people like Ron Paul and what have you. But Ron Paul got a white constituency, and they voted him in, then he's going to go with that. If somebody in Detroit got a black constituency, they're going to vote him in. But the difference between Ron Paul and somebody black is Ron Paul will open his mouth up and say, my people need this. Somebody black can sit there and be quiet and not say nothing at all. And now we got a black caucus, we got a black president, and we ain't saying nothing at all.
I'm not saying
it's on the president. This just showed me that here we got that. We got it all now. What you going to do? We got it all. And now if you've been in Congress, and most of them have been in Congress over 25 years, so they know the game. They finally got one of theirs in. And what do? They be quiet. They don't use the opportunity to get nothing in their districts, nothing in their job, nothing. Oh, why? Oh, because they backed Hillary Clinton, told the president he wasn't shit when he's trying to, when he was nothing when he's trying to blow up. People forget about that. There's an article in the paper today reminding the people about how Bobby Rush was disrespecting the president right now by calling him a half-breed, an educated white boy who can't talk to the people. It's Bobby Rush who defeated Barack Obama and when he ran for Congress against him. But such harsh words that he threw out there by speaking, let me tell you how incorrect those words were. Here go a congressman talking about an educated black man who's using educated words by saying, you sound like a white boy. You have breached not one of us. Why? Because he spoke articulate. Now here go Bobby Rush reinforcing the stereotypes that if you talk black and be educated and smart, you're acting white. So the best way to maintain it is to sit back and dumb yourself down just so you can get attention. Because everybody loves a nigga. Everybody hate a black man. You know, but not knowing what he's doing, maybe, or buying into the situation, he didn't even know. He probably was not aware that he's perpetrating the stereotype that if you be educated, you're looked down upon. Which is another thing, because now here we are. We can show black right now, the Democratic Party, Black Caucus, has an opportunity to show the next black leaders of how you can legislate. Earlier off, I was playing clips of the first black congressman and just hear them so articulately speaking over issues that meant so dear to not only their constituents in their towns, but all out through America. But now here we go. They're not saying nothing, and they have the opportunity. I mean, overwhelmingly 99% of people voted for Barack Obama. So it's not as if. We didn't put him in there. The world knows we did.
But see, that's because there's such a problem with what he looks like, and people can't get it. And even though this is the year 2014, people still can't get past that. And that just goes to show that we got some problems. We got big problems.
I'm not going to just throw it on Obama. It's easy, but let's play the game. If the LGBT community can send their representatives to Congress and go lobby for the behalf, if Luis Gutierrez can come up with a DREAM Act and make that the national talking point during Barack Obama's administration about making sure that illegal immigrants get their just deserved, why can't the Black Caucus come up with just something as equivalent as student loans, make it easier for African Americans to get student loans so their kids go to school, or bailing out black college or something on a grand scale. And say, oh, they're not saying nothing, Dana. They're not saying nothing. And that's the sad part. We had Barack Obama for 6 years down there, and I said nothing. 2 years, he's gone. And if you get any president, they can say that, shut up, you didn't say nothing. You had a black president. What should I do for you? And they'd be telling the truth. So why sell ourselves out now? You know, like I said, it's easy to blame Obama. We can do it all day. I can do it all day. You know, my position on Ukraine, it flips every day. So I'm like, man, Putin, you can't be fun of my president. You know what I'm saying? Even though you have my president back over the serious stuff, but man, there is a democratic elected country. Why are we going in over that? What's really going on? You know, but it's difficult to make a choice. I know that's not important right now in America. We should be focused on that right now. We should focus on, we're still unemployed here. Jobs ain't created, gas all high. But every time you put your mind on the right focus, we get distracted. Overseas stuff. I mean, what? Ain't no boots going on the ground. We already shrinking our military. The president already said that. So we're going to put boots on the ground already. You know, we already shrinking our military down. We're taking the budget cut so that we already saying we're sequestering. So, you know, why everybody getting all revved up? You know, what's really going on? You know, people fail to realize at the last minute, Putin came in and helped Barack Obama out in Syria. I mean, what's really going on? We don't know what's happening. We just making judgment. I can't say what happened. I don't have no dossier. I'm not reading, you know, the daily briefings. You know, I'm just going on about what I see or what I've seen and what I've read and what I've studied. You know, but, you know, we just got to get information to the people, and that's what's really lacking, Dana. People ain't getting no information, you know.
I agree.
You know, like I said, it's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about right or wrong. And right now, in all the urban areas, we're all black Democrats. And we're suffering. And if you look at most black cities, it's ran by all Democrats. None of them can say if the Republicans are doing it to them. We're blaming Republicans in Congress so we can seem like we know something because we're behind Obama. We see they're jumping on Obama, so we're going to jump on them like, get up off them, being distracted by what's going on in the neighborhood. It's steadily crumbling. You know, steadily deteriorating. But we want to sound all smart. Look at Reverend Light. Look what ICE is doing. Oh, no. Oh, man, you better check Bader. He off the spot. Ain't nothing better doing this. It ain't investing me in the shot. You know, I mean, and the majority wins. And the majority of the time, Boehner and Obama have seen eye to eye. It's been a minority, a small few times when they have not seen eye to eye. And that's the greatest mystery why everybody jumping on Boehner and saying he's this and that. Now realizing I have an Obama.
Because the difference is, even when they're seeing eye to eye, it appears that he still is unwilling to bend and do the right thing. I mean,
because,
you know,
donations. That's all for donations. When he go back home,
in my opinion,
people say it.
The politics have gotten to the point to where they're so political that they have lost sight of what's really important. These people have been elected by the people and are supposed to be for the people. You know
True
what
that.
I'm saying?
But
we
I
should
agree.
Not be sitting around saying, oh, no, don't ask him. He won't do anything. All he's trying to do is pad his pockets while their family,
right.
And I'm not making reference to anyone in particular, but while their families are able to live out on a hog and a vacation and, you know, all these things where everybody else is stuck.
Well, it's in the paper right now, Dana. It's in the paper right now. You got cats like Bobby Rush taking cuts. I said I'm not going to trip on this in that way at election yet. You got Bobby Rush taking cuts with the flyover metro. You got Howard Brooker's alderman here in Chicago, 21st Ward, taking bribes. His chief somebody's office taking bribes to get a liquor license. You got Avery House burning burning grocery stores up in your neighborhood. You know, you got Pat Quinn with a slush fund giving out to aldermen so he can get elected. Yeah, they patting their pockets. No, they ain't doing nothing for nobody. It's a game. I'm going to repeat it again to all my listeners. And you too, Dan, if you ain't doing nothing tomorrow. Google Howard Brookins bribery. Web and News, everybody. Then Web and News, everybody, Google Pat Quinn slush fund. $52 million. Web and News. Google Web and News. Then Google Mel Reynolds Higginbottom. Then Google Congressman Bobby Rush.
But see, you also Bible. Have to give the statistics about people that are not Democrats that are doing the same thing. It's not
oh,
like
no,
it's
oh,
just
no.
one group.
Everything's about
like
to be exposed. No, no.
Group.
Everything's about to get exposed. You see, what's done in the dark will come out in the light. Everything is being exposed. Mel Reynolds is not just only about to expose black people. He's about to expose white people. Because they should not have been doing business in Zimbabwe under pretense that they can get the president to flip the script like he's some monkey. All these cats in the shy, we went down with Obama, couldn't stand him, going to say he got elected, give me some money, I can change policy about your country. Now, what I'm saying right now, for those of you all have no idea what the F I'm talking about, let me repeat these things for you. Google Mel Reynolds Higginbottom. I mean, Google, go to Web and News. Then Google Bobby Rush, Zimbabwe, because they all connected. Then Google Bobby Rush Investigations or the Rush Papers. Then Google Pat Quinn, Slush Fund. And if you're from Chicago, Alderman Howard Brookins, Bribery. Now, all those go right. Why I'm saying those people? Because all that pays attention. Excuse me. Hold on. I don't know what that is. Now, the reason why I'm making that point is it affects my election. Because after March 19th, Bobby Rush will be investigated for Zimbabwe. Investigate for all those BGA, the Metro, the office, the non-taxes, the Senate delegation to Zimbabwe, and his benefactor, L.D. Higginbottom, is caught up in Zimbabwe, blood diamond mines, about to be exposed by Mel Reynolds. And the next guy who was ready to take Bobby Rush's spot if he stepped down, Howard Brookins, got caught in bribery. Now, the Alderman Pat Quinn, who gave those money to, also reside in my district also, so they're going to be called up, so they're not going to be able to help Bobby Rush also in this thing because they're all going to be guilty and running for cover. That's why you can Google all those things and see why it's we sending Jimmy Lee to D.C. It's all about Jimmy Lee to D.C. Feel me, Dana? Don't it got a nice little ring to it?
It does. I agree, 100%.
Rolls right off the tongue. Right off the tongue. Now, I'm going to try to be on tomorrow, Dana. Real talk, because my stuff got hacked. You know, so why? I had to get all the music that I lost. So you all have been listening to me going into the music, and I try to be on Twitter, too, at New Music Thursday at Twitter. But go in there, Dana. Go in there and give me your salutation so I can go out with my son's anarchy theme. God's going to cut you down because, you know, you don't cut him down, Dana. Hit me off.
You said what?
God's going to cut every, all these little wicked politicians that are not doing stuff, especially for my friends who go to them assistant. God's going to cut them down. And the right side, Anita. All right, go ahead on. Give me a shout out.
Well, I agree, Jimmy. I think that it's time to change. It's time to stop talking about it and start being about it. You know, we need people that's going to be out here representing us and representing us well. I mean, as a constituent, I need somebody that's going to care about me and what's going on around me. We need somebody that's interested in improving the lives of the people that elected them into office. And so my hat's off to you. You know, I wish you the best of luck. I'm behind you. Jimmy Lee of D.C., I can't wait to see you in office, and I'm looking forward to having you do the right thing.
Man, we'll tell your people and your mom and your people that tell everybody about. Matter of fact, you need to bring your ass down voting purpose. And ass is not it's not a curse word. It is a donkey. Thank you very kindly. And shit is not about. It's a verb, adjective, person, place, thing. I'll discuss that later. Anyway, this is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. We're gonna try to get it in tomorrow on my son's birthday. JG, Joe Gay. Let's do a live broadcast. Hope you tune in, my son, Joe Gay. Okay, everybody, dig it. Bobby Rush, Pat Quinn, Brookins, Elsie Higginbottom. What's done in the dark will come to light. This is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.